Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back for a momentous occasion to talk about
how we're going to do weekly Game of Thrones updates.
Yeah, and a rewatch, and we're doing it. No, we're not doing any of that stuff.
We have gotten an average of one podcast a week for the last 2 weeks. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, we did that Kim interview last week.
There are going to be a lot more episodes where those came from, because apparently it was just announced, well, a couple of things. Just announced that they canceled one series, one prequel series that was supposed to...
It's kind of the kind of loose name attached to that was The Long Night. It was
set around the time of the...
Thousands of years before Game of Thrones in the first Age of Heroes, where the White Walkers first appeared.
Yep. And the other bit of news is that they have greenlit Beyond Pilot, I think. The series House of the Dragon, which is going to be all about the Targaryen dynasty. And that's also a prequel, obviously.
Yeah, this is, they said it's going to be based on the Fire and Blood history. We've already got volume one. In fact, I reviewed volume one back last year, the year before last, when it first came out.
Link in the show notes.
To the, like, I think it's a 6-part series or something like that. But yeah, and then there's a little bit of news in Schadenfreude, which is... the Double D's got bounced off the Star Wars movie trilogy, and we'll talk about these things in order. Jim, what was your reaction to the cancellation of The Long Night? HBO had invested some money in this. They had a showrunner, Jane Goldman attached. They'd done a lot of casting. They'd shot a full pilot in Northern Ireland, watched the pilot and said, meh.
Well, they said... Here's the thing. These two things are linked, obviously, right? Like they've made a decision on which of the prequel series they're going forward with. And I think we always kind of knew, because they were talking about 3, 4, like however many prequels in development, we knew that there was going to be something that had to give there. They were going to have to pick one and go with it. And they've just essentially made that decision. I don't think it was like, oh, this pilot sucked and all the people involved should be ashamed. I think it was more like, we have faith in the House of the Dragon.
See, I disagree. I think that this pilot must have been pretty bad or underwhelming because they ordered the Fire and Blood thing straight to the series, which means there's going to be no pilot. They're just going to make 10 episodes of this and then we're going to air it. That seems a little bit like, hey, we thought we were going to have this prequel show ready to go and we're developing these other things, but like... Now they feel like they're behind schedule, that Game of Thrones didn't end the way they wanted it to. Game of Thrones is going to be off the air longer than they thought it was going to be, and we need to get something. Oh, shit, George has got half a book written. Let's do it.
But I just wonder, what was it about the pilot that could have been so bad that a recasting or that changing up the directors and the showrunners and stuff like that couldn't have solved?
I tell you what, I think the one big thing is that that they didn't count on is the Double D's cut the nuts off the White Walkers.
Well, yeah, that didn't help.
Like, to the extent that they were interesting villains, something would have to matter. Like, they'd have to do something to where, like, you'd be like, wow, how did all this start? At the end of the day, the White Walkers are a very minor threat that were relatively easily handled with. And people went on with their lives. So, like, I feel like the Double D's decision to minimize, you know, we'll talk about this, to minimize the fantasy elements and to kind of lean away that and subvert expectations. You know, all that stuff with the mystery, them abducting babies and trans, none of that stuff really mattered. So, like, why the hell would anyone be interested in a sequel or in a prequel that's built all around their initial menace if eventually they just get defeated easily?
I don't know. I mean, filling in color is kind of what George Martin has been doing for the last 5 years, right? He's been writing these books about the Targaryens. And,
the world of ice and fire.
Doing all these fucking art books. And yeah, I mean, so like...
But is that
They didn't do anything with it in the series Game of Thrones. Yeah. But, you know, you could go back and fill in the White Walkers and say, okay, this is why they matter. This is like who they are and stuff like that. It might be interesting.
I think also like when you look at the landscape of like, isn't Amazon that's shooting the Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Kind of Silmarillion. Like to me, one of the reasons that people really liked Game of Thrones, I know you did, is because it's got this kind of like really in-depth kind of real world politics.
Yeah.
Through a medieval lens, and there's just not a lot of that in A Long Night. It's like epic high fantasy.
Okay.
You know, like mythical creatures right off the bat, and the you know, magic is kind of like a living, breathing part of this world.
Good. Cancel that one. Let's go with the House of the Dragon.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, so they're going like, you know, Targaryen history is just one long, trashy soap opera list of like politics and this and that, and there's lots of interesting colorful characters even halfway through but I also don't know, like, there's also a lot, there's 300 years of history. Do you go with the invasion of Aegon the Conqueror? Do you go with like the Dance of Dragons? Do you go with the Blackfyre Rebellion? There's a lot of different ways you could go, if you go back and listen to those talks that, you know, Anthony and Kim had about Fire and Blood, some of that shit was pretty dry, and some of that stuff was also very some people said this and some people said this, and then fucking Mushroom the Fool said this, except for it's a dick joke. Like, there's not a lot of like straightforward narrative. It reads more like a history book, a very high level history book at that.
Yeah. So, do you think they can fill that stuff out?
Oh, sure.
And sort of dramatize the history book?
But I also
wonder...
The way
that, like, Dan Carlin does with his podcast?
Yeah, no, you could totally do it. I just wonder, like... The thing is how do you keep it from being a lower-stakes version of Game of Thrones? Oh, and what I mean by that is literally... At any point, this is just the action of Game of Thrones minus the ever-present threat of the White Walkers. It's just it's almost always just a rebellion. You know,
is that a bad thing? I don't know. That's a bad thing. Like, how many fucking cop dramas have I seen in my life?
How many times have we seen the Death Star or a super weapon being destroyed in Star Wars?
And I'll be honest, like, the White Walkers weren't the most interesting part of that. It was all the political machinations to me, particularly. So. Yeah, I could be in on that.
Yeah.
I don't see a problem with that. I think you're right, though. It probably is the better choice of the two.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13, some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I saw that. So, like, George Martin and Ryan Condal, he's known for 3 seasons of Colony, which is a science fiction show that I've never seen before.
Yeah. With Sawyer from Lost. Sure. And Sarah Wayne Callies, actually.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, I don't have no idea about that as his reputation as a showrunner. I know that supposedly Miguel Sapochnik and Condal will be co-showrunners, and I have a lot of faith in Miguel.
Yeah.
And also George, if he's like, you know, obviously he's motivated to write 600 some pages of the first volume of a Targaryen history, presumably 600 more. So you got him on his game working there.
It could just be they greenlit this one because it's the one George was most interested in.
I mean, it could
be. And they figured like he would be able to actually sustain a little
bit. It is funny that they're ordering straight to series, a series based on a set of books in the Game of Thrones universe that George Martin has yet to complete.
Yeah, man.
but I guess if they're telling
a history repeating.
If they're telling the you know, like the dance, if they're wanting to tell the Dance of Dragons, or if they're wanting to tell the, like, you know, story of the initial invasion of Westeros, then they pretty much got that in the can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the last 150 years of the Targaryens leading up to the Baratheon period. But the thing is that's also like, that's kind of probably the juiciest stuff. If you want to tell like what led up to the Baratheon rebellion, you know, let's like, I'm sure there's lots of people would like to know more about, Lyanna Stark and her love affair with Rhaegar Targaryen. And you'd have you'd have the Mad King, you'd have, you know, young versions of, Robert and Ned Stark to play with. There's, I could see that being the most interesting piece, but also that's the piece that George Martin has yet. But I imagine that's one of the ones he's fleshed out the most, because there's so much of that that's kind of in the appendices and the nooks and crannies of Game of Thrones.
That's the thing. I was going to say, you know, it's encouraging to see that at least there's an outline for that. We know the general history
of
that.
Would you say some bullet points?
I would say, yes, a series of bullet points. But we saw how that worked out before, so.
And crucially, we know how it ends.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
So they're like, it'd be like the best case scenario for this is just a really good like Star Wars prequels, because they really book in neatly to the next generation. But honestly, since I know a lot about that time period, I would like for them to explore something like the Blackfyre Rebellion, which I think is a juicy topic, or the Dance of Dragons, or the I don't know, but the original Conquering would be interesting. Just like Targaryens coming in and kicking the shit out of Westeros with their giant dragons.
Yeah.
It's like the conquest of Dany only. Yeah, it's just the conquest of Dany. Did you like people writhing in fields of fire? Hmm. Well, you got six seasons of it coming to HBO Plus. Or HBO Max, I guess those are calling it.
I don't know if that's what I want. I don't really just want a stampede. I don't want a steamroller of a series.
But yeah, ordering straight to season or straight to series means that this is a done deal. Like this will... it's going to be shot. It's going to be shot as a whole, and it's which means good or bad or ugly, it's going to make it to air. And sooner rather than later. Do you want to? Is there anything else we want to talk about? Just in either of these, either the cancellation or the news about it being picked up. I will also this stuff that is being reported in Vanity Fair. I'll link to those articles in the show notes if you guys want to read it with your own two eyes, or one eye, or no eyes, or three eyes, whatever. Do you want to talk about this a little bit more, or do you want to get right to the double D's?
Yeah, let's talk about the double D's, because this I find horrifying, fascinating, disturbing. I don't know. It's all just a clusterfuck.
Yeah, so this, within a 24-hour period, there was a thread on Twitter posted by a Twitter account named @4Aria. And they were sitting in the Austin Film Festival, and they essentially did a paraphrased Q&A session that they relayed. So in the paraphrasing, maybe I'll just disclaimer, maybe this person is being uncharitable in the paraphrasing.
Could be.
So just keep that in mind, but we're going to kind of go. So that got released, and then we also found out that the Double D's got released from their Star Wars 3 movie trilogy. A Star Wars deal.
Yeah.
And they still have their $250 million dollar Netflix deal intact.
Yep.
Before we get in, do you think that that's in danger?
No.
Really?
No.
This also within a week of Gemini, the first thing that Benioff, I think, has worked on even before Game of Thrones, and it flopped and flopped hard.
I think there was so much... like knowing what was up going into this deal, like they knew that they had this Star Wars deal on the table, that they were probably going to have to work just an insane amount to get, you know, all these series that Netflix wanted plus the Star Wars thing going. I don't think that Star Wars being off the table is a bad thing in Netflix eyes. I think that's almost a good thing.
Do you think Netflix is scared at all that they've bought a lemon on the car?
They should be. If they're not, they should be. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about this Twitter thread to kind of like delve into? Because here's the thing. Dan and David were both born incredibly wealthy and privileged people. David Benioff was born to the head of Goldman Sachs, megabucks. Dan was wealthy enough to able to study abroad, went to college, got his degree in Irish literature over in Ireland. And Game of Thrones was literally the first television work they'd ever done.
Yeah.
And one of the things, it kind of came out when I was reading Kim's book on the unofficial guide to Game of Thrones, is like, I wasn't aware of like what a fucking debacle that the pilot was.
Yeah.
Apparently it had to be like 90% of it reshot. And just stuff like that kept coming out. And then this Twitter thread dropped. I'm going to read a couple tweets and get your reaction from it.
It's all going to be just pulling my hair out going, what the fuck?
David said that they went to fan casting pages and that's how they found Jason Momoa.
I don't know what these are.
What do you mean?
Fan casting pages?
Oh, yeah. So like if you go to like anytime there, like let's say that your people are really excited about the Harry Dresden Files series from Jim Butcher and you go to the subreddit there, there's, every 3 months there'll be a casting thread. Who do you think would be good for this? Who do you think would be good for that?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So they like,
I thought this was some industry term for like.
No.
Having up and coming actors audition for them.
Literally are farming out casting deals too. But I guess that's in
they
isolation not a big deal.
And it like that's the thing, right? Like they're newbie fans, like newbie producers and writers, or television writers anyway, and fans. So they probably thought, yeah, that's a cool way to go. Mm. Give the fans what they want.
Yeah, in isolation, I mean, it rankles a little bit that, like, you know, you're essentially crowdsourcing your work out to fans, but, you know, whatever.
But the fans are smart. Fans might have some good picks.
Uh-huh. They said that, like, they're describing the pre-meeting with George Martin, who was questioning their bona fides, and that they didn't really have any because they'd never done TV, and they can't explain why they trusted him or them with their life's work.
I can't either.
He said they talked about the pilot with their friends who they let watch the first attempt at the pilot. One of the people was Craig Mazin, who wrote Chernobyl. And they acknowledged that the first pilot had many basic writing mistakes. They acknowledged they had no idea why after such a dismal pilot HBO went forward. Quote, everything we could make a mistake in, we did. The script, casting, costume. They think the HBO went forward because they had a lot of foreign pre-sales on the series. So it's like, shit, we've already sold this and
but I don't
China
know why
Russia,
they went
so.
Forward with them at the helm, if that's the case. Because you could certainly bring in some more experienced people, right? They just go splash some cash onto anybody who's done a popular TV show in the last decade, bring them in, have them do it.
Here's a head slapper. Dan's quoted as saying Game of Thrones was, quote, basically an expensive film school for me and Dave.
Oh, God.
We had no idea how to work with costume designers. It was such a huge learning experience. Oh, my God, Jim.
The hilarious thing is if Stranger Things was not a hit that it is, you'd be saying the same thing about the Duffers.
Well, sure.
But the investment, like the thing that boggles my mind about all of this, every single quote we're going to read is the amount of money behind this thing. The amount of money that HBO knew they were going to put into this and the trust that they put in people who had never done this before, regardless of, you know, how smart or how big of fans or whatever the double D's are, how do you put that much cash and that much trust in the hands of people who do not have any kind of proven track record?
2 months before the pilot was to air, their episodes averaged 39 minutes long, and HBO forced them to reshoot over 100 minutes of scenes to meet their contractual obligations.
That's another problem here, contractual obligations.
Like 39-minute episodes of Game of Thrones? Like, and this is like presumably when they're most motivated, they're working their hardest, they're like most intense, George Martin standing over their shoulder in the first few seasons. Holy shit. The moderator at one point asked them about their comments, acknowledging they didn't understand the characters, and the extra minutes helped them understand the characters better. So being forced by HBO to go back and write 100 minutes allowed them to figure out the characters in Game of Thrones, which they were fans of, the series, the book series, The Song of Ice and Fire.
Right.
Dan said that they let the actors redefine their roles, especially Maisie Williams. And they began writing for the actors.
13 at the time?
Yeah. 13, 14? Maybe not even that old in the beginning.
She was very young. That seems like a lot of trust to put in a child.
He said they learned about the characters from the actors. What the fuck is this madness? the moderators asked them why they chose to write all the episodes by themselves. Because we didn't know better. HBO said, or David said HBO wanted them to hire other writers, so they decided to have Brian Cogman, their assistant, write 4 episodes. Again, this is like a lot of, one thing I asked Kim is like, why didn't, if these guys were getting tired of Game of Thrones, and there's a couple times they this guy on Twitter mentions throughout this whole thing, they cite, was it the word wasted, or they gave up 10 years of their life making Game of Thrones, which is a very curious way to describe a passion project.
They sold 10 years of their lives for millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
They sold 10 years of their lives for more money than I will see in my entire life.
Yes.
How about let's put it that way? I think one of the things to probably remember about this is a lot of this stuff is talking about the early going.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early going, nobody had a problem with the show. They did a hell of a job with the early stuff. And so when they say, like, we didn't know any better about writing all the episodes ourselves, they wrote some really good shit that everybody loved for 5 years.
Like, we even mentioned in the first season, that scene between, like, Robert Baratheon and Cersei Lannister is some of the great, is really good writing. It's all original. And it was all them doing, like, at the end of a barrel of a gun.
But more you look at it, it seems like the more of a fluke those scenes were. Like, they had so much material to work with that all they really had to do was pare back a lot of it. And then the stuff that they did add themselves seems more like they got lucky and didn't disturb the good, really, really good stuff that Martin had wrote too much.
And it was really good casting, too.
Yeah, fantastic casting.
This goes back to this question that I was asking Kim Renfro, that, like, if they said, you know, they kept on saying that they had to give up 10 years of their life, give up 10 years of life. Why, once this stopped becoming like an adaptation they're doing for fun as passion, why didn't they like then bring more people in? Why didn't they, you know, kind of like still executive produce, but like maybe bring in a young a person with more experience to show run this thing, something that's got more experience, so like just original writing? That's the one question. I don't understand like why they felt like they had to make this their baby. When HBO wanted to expand this, when HBO wanted to let it breathe more, and they were clearly just wanting to sprint to the finish line.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I'll never understand. Dan said that they wanted to remove as many fantasy elements as possible because we didn't want to just appeal to that type of fan, which...
I like that.
That's...
that's actually one of the things that hooked me on the show.
Yeah, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad idea. Now, I do think that the mistake they made was to continue the pivoted way, because... clearly, the end of this story was intended to have a whole bunch of fantasy elements in it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end, they essentially just punted on all that shit and just went back to, you know, well, it's Lannisters versus everybody else, which might have also worked if they had, you know, some more talent to work with. One point they said is, like, why did the battles consistently get better? It's because they kept their core group of stunt coordinators together, and these people were learning. The same people that did the fights in season 2 were the ones that did the fights in season 7, so they just got better and better as they did it. And you saw that a little bit in the documentary they made. Like, those people, like, knew everything. It kept on getting more and more ambitious, but you got this clear idea that they were, like, leveling up in their abilities as a filmmaker in a way that, like, I don't think... you didn't see that same parallel kind of growth and ability to tell a story in the writer's room.
Yeah. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited. It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live. Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday. Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
One thing they were asked, were you listening to the feedback of your fans as things went along? Dan said they did not. Dan said he does not see the value in considering other people's reactions. Dave acknowledged that he Googled the show and it upset him. I think is defensible too. Like, if you're a creative person, going out and like finding out what other people are saying about your is not, I don't think, going to improve the process.
Well, I think it could drive you crazy because everybody's going to have a different opinion. Everybody's going to hate everything you do, and everybody's also going to love everything you do. So
yeah.
I feel him on that.
Here's a scary quote. Did you really sit down to try to boil the elements of the books down? Did you try to understand its major elements? Answer, no, we didn't. Scope was just too big. It was about the scenes we were trying to depict, and the show was about power. Okay, it's too big to try to break down, so don't even bother trying. Just hurtle towards that cliff.
And yet they did end up boiling down a lot of major elements, you know? And it seems like that was almost accidental.
Well, I mean, I just think that they did a really good job of adapting what Martin had on the page for the most part. There were some definite missteps here and there.
But there were so many things they cut out, which to me is boiling down the elements.
Mm-hmm.
They're implying that all that stuff happened not intentionally, but by accident, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like they were looking for the power story and telling that story, and all those other things just sort of happened along the way. Which is crazy, because I think you're right. Like, they did a really good job of that.
There's also a quote, and when they talk about stress and giving up 10 years of their life, Dan said it was like a 10-year drunken party.
Oh, man, it must have been rough.
What's the hangover like, Dan and Dave? We woke up, and Jesus Christ, where did we park this Disney series? Oh, my God, it's in the ditch. It's on fire.
Fucking buy a new one.
I don't know. I'm going to be very curious to see if they're able to generate any kind of interest or buzz for Netflix, because at this point with this, I mean, it could be that they take their lumps and they learn from this and they buckle down, they surround themselves with better people. And they include more people in the writing room, and this is a really learning experience. It is a damn shame, though. It does seem like that these guys, this is a really great example of just kind of this mediocre falling up You know, it's like, hey, we got my parents are rich. Your parents are rich. Hey, you like Game of Thrones? I like Game of Thrones. Hey, let's convince a company to give us $50 million to do it just because we wowed George Martin with a steak dinner one night and we're good looking and flashy and we go for broke on selling enthusiasm. Like these kind of deals don't get just handed out. But then you find out this stuff and like how they were able to put this together from almost nothing. It's kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Game of Thrones is safe from the double D's for the immediate future. It seems like it's in good hands with Sapochnik and Martin.
I mean, we'll be covering it.
Yeah, like,
they haven't spoiled us on the world of Martin. So,
And I am curious. I am excited to see them going for the Targaryen history. I think that's a lot better fit for what Game of Thrones is and what fans are kind of expecting, especially since, again, they kind of ruined the prequel. It's like if imagine if Darth Vader just shit his pants and Return of the Jedi and punched himself in the dick and accidentally killed himself and the Emperor and fell down a reactor shaft.
Uh-huh.
Like, prequel Star Wars, not as interesting, right?
Probably not. Yeah.
So I think that's what happened with the White Walkers. They cut them their own heads off with lightsabers while they're punching themselves in the dicks. So now we got the Targaryens to play with, and it's in better hands. Star Wars is out of their hands. They can't hurt that franchise.
Yep.
I'm not sure when the next time we'll be back on this feed. If there's any crazy news like this, when we start to hear some like casting. We get a little bit more information about the series. We'll be back to do some updates. But please stay subscribed for more kind of emergency podcasts like this. Thank you for all the ones that have stayed subscribed. And we'll see you the next time when we see you. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya. So I don't know when the next time we'll be back on this feed to talk. Probably it depends on how much news comes out and like, you know, when there's big casting or we get closer to the production, there's actually news to talk about. We'll come back. Obviously, if Fire and Blood comes back. Obviously, like I said last with Kim, Winds of Winter released, we'll be back. But it's not like we're sitting around doing nothing. I know you have an HBO subscription or at least have a method of getting one. And there's another hot series. I don't know if you've heard. Damon Lindelof has adapted a sequel to The Watchmen, and it's real good. 2 episodes in.
I thought you were going to say The Deuce. Also very good. Not
we just
nearly
got
as popular.
Done putting The Deuce, that series, to bed by The Wire's David Simon. It's very, very good. We had full coverage of that. We also are talking about the final season of Mr. Robot. We also have coverage of His Dark Materials. Cecily from the American Horror Story and other podcasts is going to be joined by Alexis of Pin Y fame to be covering that. What else are we doing?
Rick and Morty is a big one. It's coming. Season 4 is coming a week, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, we just got done doing all coverage of all 3 existing seasons. We've been joined by some special guests like Jonah Ray and Alan Sepinwall. And we'll be continuing that format with season 4 with the live coverage of the new seasons. We're doing that. Probably be talking a little bit of Mandalorian ahead. Speaking of Star Wars, we'll also be having a review of the new sequel, Star Wars 9, the final one, Rise of Skywalker. We'll have that on the Bald Movies feed. Stop by baldmove.com if you're looking for some TV talk, some TV coverage. We got a lot going on this last half of the year, this last quarter of the year. But until we see you on Game of Thrones, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.